Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the Indie Rugby Podcast, that gives you the news, views and opinion on the week's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we're at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, lots of other podcatchers, but also, as you've already heard, the Sports Social Network. I'm joined this week by the nicest man in Cornish Rugby podcasting, Ben Eustace. How you doing, Ben?
Good, thanks, mate. Not got my Dolphins hat on this week.
Obviously not. Tua, is he still alive?
Yeah. I mean, let's not get into concussions, eh?
Oh, yeah. that's a slippery slope.
Are you going to go on the long snapper and talk about concussions now?
No, I'm not. No, definitely not. No, I'm not interested. They can all, like... They could have put him back in the game for all I care. And it's a welcome return. First one of the season to the Housewives' favourite. Welcome back, Phil.
Thank you.
Head coach.
It's been a while. Yeah. Life's just got kind of busy. I don't know what I was thinking with two kids who do clubs pretty much every day of the week deciding to take on head coaching role at Newquay Hornets. But... I'll make it work somehow.
I'm sure you will. And I must admit, I've enjoyed training the past few weeks, and I'm going to continue to train, even not playing. You know, like when there's loads of people available, I'll just train and be a tackle bag or something, and just.
And you know what? I think that's a point that's missing a bit at grassroots rugby is people who've done it, been there, got the t-shirt. And then don't really want to play games anymore, but can add a degree of experience to training sessions and also add some numbers. It's much easier running a drill with 25 players than it is running one with 15. So, yeah, thanks for that, Russ. And that's my plea to everybody who's listening who might not have played rugby for a while to just stick on a pair of boots and go down and...
Just start by going training.
How does that sound to you, Ben? Ben hasn't been training for about 35 years.
I was going to say, I was very reluctant to train when I was actually playing, so it's going to be a stretch now.
It's probably more fun when you're not playing.
It is funny because I've found training a lot more enjoyable when there's no pressure to kind of play. It's quite odd. And I know that there's a few more people that were training last week than the week before. And we've spoken about it with Doug on here. And then this week, I know there's a few more people coming to training that probably haven't been before. There's a couple of dads from the under eights, which I coach, are on about coming up to train in just to get back in, just to throw a ball around and stuff like that. So, you know, it's got to be good for the club, right? And there's no better thing to get the thing buzzing than beating top of the league. And
yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, I know you've spoke about it before. We've had a fairly rough start to the season. We've had to offer friendlies for a couple of games because we've been short of a full 15 or and in particular short of front row. And then the two games previously that we had played, we were the better side really and just couldn't put it away. Like, our defence is excellent, absolutely phenomenal. Conceded very few points all season, but just haven't been able to cross that whitewash. So it was good to turn that around against Red Ruth Seconds at the weekend and get the W. And yeah, season starts from here.
Oh, hopefully it bodes well for the rest of the season for Nuki anyway. And you know, the dark times of this early stage are behind us. Before we go any further, it's only right for me to ask after the man child. How is he getting on?
Yeah, he's all right. He's still in a lot of pain. But yeah, the story gets fulfilled with more details as time goes on.
Oh, so, really? Do you want to explain to the listeners what he managed to do to himself?
Yeah, so he was round at a friend's, went round to a friend's after a rugby match. And then the two of them with friend's parents were going to come round for dinner. And I was sat at home having cooked going, where are they? They should be here any minute. And then the phone rings. So it turns out he was in his friend's grass buggy, 150cc thing with a roll cage over the top, going downhill, down a fairly steep hill, trying to drift, and got it a bit wrong. rolled it, put his arm out at the same time he rolled it, and has snapped his humerus. So he's in a brace and loaded up on all kinds of meds and taking his own body weight in morphine. So
it's not a bone you see broken very often, is it, the humerus?
No.
Like you see like people's scaphoids and radius and ulna and the bottom part of the arm. And the top part of the arm, the humerus, is a really sort of odd bone to break.
Well, you've got your shoulders obviously got a fairly wide range of motion. So it's usually what happens is your shoulder gets pulled in a direction it shouldn't go, or you might snap your radius and ulna. But from what I can gather, his arm was pretty well fixed on the ground when the buggy went over the top of it.
Oh, well, that'll learn him.
Yeah. He said, I will go on it again. I just might not go so quick next time.
Or drift downhill.
Or drift downhill, yeah.
I mean, drifting downhill is a stupid idea. But I suppose you live and learn, don't you? You can't...
Well, there were three people there. I think he was showing off a little bit.
Oh, James.
No girls, though, which surprises me. Usually he's all for showing off in front of the girls.
Bless him. Bless him. Right. Well, no, obviously no rugby for him for a little while then. That's going to be a fair old injury.
Christmas, to be honest.
Yeah. Jeez. Was it his bowling arm as well?
No. No. He'll be fine for the cricket season.
Excellent. Right. Should we get in and talk about some rugby? Let's just touch on, first of all, the Friday night match up at Kingston Park, Newcastle versus Bristol. I turned this game on probably after about 25 minutes, and it's been a long time since I'd seen so many sets of dick fingers on one field at any one time. I mean, other than, was it Carreras that scored all the points?
Yes.
Other than him, I don't think anybody else could catch.
Well, what I thought was quite interesting was it was that awful that the commentators were literally creaming themselves off because Carreras caught a ball and making out that he was the best player ever. What he did was kind of standard run-of-the-mill wing thing, catch the ball, run over the line, put the ball down. But because he managed to do it when everybody else was dropping it, they were, beside themselves.
I'd like to point out that we get quite a lot of criticism when Phil's not here for our lack of knowledge of the scrum. And Phil's just come on the podcast and used the phrase run-of-the-mill wing thing.
that's insightful coaching, that is.
Of all the stuff we've talked about last week, when we went in-depth into scrummaging and what we should do to change it, and we had we had an honourable mention on the egg chasers this week. Tim tried to take one of Dougie's ideas around, you know, the resetting of the scrum and potentially the scrum penalties and stuff like that. And JB vehemently opposed any sort of changes being the traditionalist that he is, bless him. But we thought we came up with some stuff, Phil, around the scrum, and our resident scrum expert wasn't even there to correct us.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know. Yeah, can we back to the Bristol game? It was crap, wasn't it? It was flipping awful. I made a semi-tongue-in-cheek comment when it was mentioned about Bristol signing Malins for next season about salary cap. And then I went, actually, no, because they've only got four or five decent players and a load of squad players. And then I looked at their squad and I think that's genuinely true. There is a massive difference between the top 15 that Bristol can put out and the squad players, probably bigger than any other club. And I think they thought, oh, it's Newcastle, we can just take our squad players up there, and yeah, got their pants pulled down quite badly.
Agree. Because the likes of Joyce, Holmes, Lane, I'd never even heard of Richie Lane before this weekend. Bates, I can't imagine Bradbury gets better. I was quite impressed by Bradbury. I thought he carried really well and he actually kept them going forward. Bates, Bradbury, Holmes, Joyce, Lane. I can't imagine they pay Purdy massive amounts.
Even
they picked him up out of nowhere. Walmore,
Capon, even Jan Thomas.
Interestingly, they signed Uren to a contract to 2026, haven't they?
Really?
Yeah, and it makes you wonder that are they like pulling out contracts over longer periods and paying them less money?
Yeah,
which could be I don't know to not circumnavigate the salary cap. But if you've got, let's say you promise to pay someone, and you know, like in that, where are we now? 2022, 2023. If he's being paid till 2026, Andy Uren, is he going to be a starting Bristol scrum half in 2026?
For 4 years.
You could argue maybe not. But if they say, we'll contract you up till then and we'll spread those payments out. Actually, by the time it gets to that fifth year, that he might sort of look and potentially go and sign somewhere else. So it might be some clever strategy going on.
Yeah. And how do they handle things like signing on fees? Can they write those off over the duration of the contract? So you sign them up for a 5-year contract, give them a massive signing on fee, but there's no expectation that they stay for 5 years. You know, they're going to be gone by three. Anyway, so just a way of boosting their income without a way of sort of navigating those cap issues. I don't know. But I mean, I don't think Bristol have got the squad depth to be doing that, where they're putting in, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 changes from what would be their best 15.
What Bristol demonstrated on Friday night is that it's likely they're going to be nowhere near the top four come the end of the season.
Correct.
They've still got that sort of Avengers reputation that they had two or three seasons ago when they had all those Saracens players on loan to add to a few expensive signings. So it was kind of gave them the sort of sheen of being the top payers, which perhaps they aren't as much. You know, you had two extra England internationals just sort of grafted onto that squad, and it probably made them look more of a sort of Galactico team than they actually are.
Well, and also gave more of an impression of depth. I don't know, your Dan Thomas is struggling to get near the side because they got Ben Earl. Whereas actually he is their best seven. And when he's not there, you get Jake Heenan coming in and playing. And this is no disrespect to the players that are there. I'm sure they try their hardest. They're just not of the same quality. Whereas what Newcastle have got is, obviously they've added the two Argentines in the middle, or the three Argentines, but they've got a squad that's based around kind of, it's more that we play together as a squad, kind of we're bigger than the sum of our parts attitude. And they have their catch and drive game absolutely nailed as well.
Yeah, they have to have that sort of togetherness, don't they? They have to have that team ethos, work ethic, because if they don't, then they haven't got too much else in regards to individual brilliance. Obviously, they were without Ferns on Friday night. Radwan, I think, was pretty well marshalled because Carreras took home all the headlines. And one of the big pluses, I thought, for Newcastle was yet again George McGuigan at hooker. He seems to be having a fantastic season, both try scoring but also hitting his line outs, getting around the park. And now with Jamie George injured, I think he should be, he's probably going to be right up there with.
He played the full 80 as well, which
well,
is
he did, because Blemire is being used as an emergency back rower, isn't he?
Yeah, he came on at 7.
Who was it? And I need to work this out. There was the funny moment in this game where Kyle Sinclair, who didn't have the best of after evenings, to be fair, he got on the wrong side of Luke Pearce pretty early. And I thought for a Luke Pearce refereed game, he was quite fussy in general. But Sinclair got on the wrong side of him earlier. But you heard him, heard Sinclair over the mic say something to one of the Newcastle props. He said it was something along the lines of he was giving him a bit of a hard time. And Carl Sinclair just turned around to him and went, I don't even know who you are, mate.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for all of his shithousery, that was quite funny. Okay, let's move on from Newcastle Bristol. A much needed home victory for Newcastle, their first of the season. So that will put them up the table somewhat. Another team without a win this season, Ben, a Bath. They lost 47-38 away at London Irish. And I know, Phil, we're going to come on to a wider point of this in a minute. Loader and Hassel Collins both getting hat tricks. Phil, I think you made the point in the wider group about it doesn't seem to matter who Bath sign or who coaches Bath. They still seem to not really go anywhere and they still appear to be quite shit.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at the players that they've had coming through, there's no way in the world they should be as bad as they are. And the last couple of years, I've put it down to kind of a bit of a weak underbelly, a bit of a weak desire to crack on and just do the donkey work. But I think as potentially something a bit more systemic than that, because they've changed. They brought Hatley in and now they've brought, what's his face, South African chap in, and nothing seems to change. So I don't know if is there an inherent player power issue there that the coaches can't get on top of, or is there, I don't know, there just seems to be something systemically wrong with the club.
Do you not think it's a little bit to do with being the top dogs in the town? Like
Bristol, they're the only dogs in the town.
Exactly.
It's,
like
it's Bath, any other dogs get shot or taken to the pound.
But what I mean is Bristol, you've got Bristol City. If you play for any of the London teams, you've got all the London football clubs. Sale is in Manchester, whereas in Bath there is only rugby. There isn't really any competition to it. I don't think that really, I don't think it's a conscious thing, but maybe that just sort of subconsciously at the back of their head, they perhaps have a little bit more high regard for themselves than maybe some of the other teams do, where, you know, if they do walk into a pub or a nightclub, then perhaps in other cities, people might be a bit more, who's that big guy? Yeah.
Unless you're Marlon Yard. Yeah. He walks into a nightclub, people know.
Yeah, everyone gets out of the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say that they're like strutting around the place like, you know, well, like Danny Cipriani.
George Best.
Yeah. But I just wonder if sort of, you know, just subconsciously, if everyone is always going, oh, look, there's such and such. And, you know, maybe that
they,
is...
They believe their own hype a bit.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
I don't know. Obviously, you go back to the Ollie Barkley Bath. And they kind of delivered on it, but they haven't delivered for so flipping long that surely at some point you stop believing your own hype when you're finishing bottom of the table.
Yeah, and I mean, at one stage, you know, they were dominant, weren't they? You know, if we go back far enough. But
yeah, but then that's not, is that the players that are there now? That
exactly. Well, no, it's most that. Or less Suttons, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Obviously, there are some players, and maybe there is a bit of that. Maybe there are, maybe a Tom de Glanvilles who come through going, do you know who I am? My family's a big deal around here.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to pick a player out because...
No. Yeah, that was the first one who came to mind.
Yeah,
that
I mean, de Glanville's probably almost a shining light there, isn't he?
Actually,
I think he plays well most weeks when he's fit, but he's injured at the moment.
I'm gonna surmise that those boys probably aren't the issue because Ajomo and de Glanville... I have been excellent when I've seen them for Bath, usually. I think it's the likes, potentially the likes of Joseph.
Tom Dunn.
Yeah, well, Tom Dunn's all, like, he drives that team forward. I can't accept that for Tom Dunn. I think
he does, and then some games he just disappears out of it, or he goes too far the other way and just becomes a bit reckless.
It's just.
I mean, we've said it so many times, but it's constant injuries as well. And I know every club gets injuries, but you've got your captain, your new captain. Well, he's been injured pretty much since he became captain, Spencer. We've just mentioned de Glanville. Well, he's injured. Redpath's injured.
Underhill,
yeah.
Clater.
So,
De Carpentier.
Wilmier's out for the season now. So, you know.
That's a big blow.
Yeah, I mean.
Charlie Eales.
You could probably pick a pretty decent 15 out of injured players. Or, you know, and if you add in.
I can empathise with that.
Yeah, exactly. And if you add in players that have, you know, recently left, then you're probably going to get a 15 that's going to completely batter this one.
But there does appear to be some cavalry coming over the horizon, which I believe has been confirmed.
From the other bottom dwelling team of the Premiership.
Yeah, but at least it looks like you're getting the
best players.
Almost the pick of the bunch. Yeah. I mean, to get Ted Hill and Ollie Lawrence, I think is a great bit of business.
Yeah, and you think like if you're able to keep hold of those players, you know, past the duration of whatever the duration of the loan is, then that'd be a great bit of business. I mean, Morozov's a decent prop as well. And, you know, Lawrence, you know, we were talking about him as the next Tuilagi not too long ago. I don't think we were, but some people were. Yeah. And Ted Hill, like, I mean, he's dropped off the international radar a little bit, but he's a real good sort of English type of six, isn't he? So,
who's been out injured?
But is that depth op? You know that depth option when you've got lots of injuries to have, you know, to have Joseph and Lawrence to play 13, to have Lawrence that could play 12 with Joseph at 13, to have like another prop. You've got Stuart Morozov. You know,
if the answer was to go back to basics, then they're perfect signings because it's a strong carrying 12, a hard working 6, and a decent prop. Now, if that is still the answer, because London Irish just whacked past 7 tries, you know, and Bath scored 6 and lost, so is the basic still the answer? Hopefully,
well,
but
yeah, basic. But it's not just let's say it's not just Bath that are struggling with the basic concept of defending. You know, we only got to go back the week before for the 41-40 or whatever it was, Exeter versus Harlequins. Every game, the Leicester Northampton game that weekend, points everywhere. London Irish, every time London Irish play, they seem to score more than 30 points. Saracens put 50 on Leicester on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, Sunday, I didn't watch any of the games Sunday, but I listened to a bit on the radio. That was 35-29, and Northampton, by all accounts, should be out of sight the amount of opportunities they butchered. So Phil, you wanted to bring this up while we're in the round robin around what is our attacks generally better, or is it defenses that are worse?
Yeah, so, and I put this out in the group because I think there's definitely a discussion that needs to be had there. Just the number of points being scored is absolutely ridiculous this season. So Saracens, 122.4 in three games. And you go, well, fair enough, that's Saracens, that's what they do. But they've conceded 84. They've conceded nearly 30 points a game, 28 points a game. And before this week, I hadn't watched a huge amount of Premiership rugby because I've been generally coaching on a Friday, Saturday and Sunday. But I did watch a bit of it this weekend and then I was like, well, defences must be getting shit to be conceding that quantity of points. But the Saracens-Leicester game, I think, is a pretty good example of where I think Leicester's defence was probably at 95% efficiency. And when you go back to some of the people talk about, oh, the wonder tries from the 70s and 80s. When you go back and look at them, the tackling was flipping diabolical. People just walking off tackles, not even running particularly hard. Just like the tackling was shocking. And when you compare it with that, defences are great now. And generally, that Leicester-Saracens game as an example, the defence was really well organised, but the attack was absolutely clinical from Saracens. Every time they broke or had a half break, they're going down and scoring a try. The catching and driving has just gone to another level now for all teams. And so
it's almost impossible to stop.
Yeah,
if it's done correctly and well,
as long as it's not like the reason. If you look at what England have done with the catch and drive over the last 5 years, it's the sum total of fuck all. As long as you're doing something other than catch, bring the ball down, hooker comes in, secures the ball, two in from either side. As long as you're doing something to change the angles, split that defence, splinter the defence, it is pretty much impossible to defend if you get your drills right. And I think it's just a case that actually some of those drills have been absolutely nailed down. Plus, I'm also wondering, and it'd be interesting to know your guys' take on this as people who've been in the backs more recently than me. It seems to be that, particularly look at the Leicester-Sarries game, but also in the Northampton game, Quinns, it seems to be whenever the ball gets outside that 13 channel, there's a 3-on-1, or certainly a 2-on-1, and that leads to a break in a decent distance. It seems that teams are either defending quite narrow, or is it the 50-22 doing what it was supposed to do and dragging more defenders back so that there's less in that primary line? So if you fix your men and get wide, there's opportunities. And if that is the aim, and that if that is part of it, it's worked. But I'm not sure I like it.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say, Phil, with your verdict at the end as well. I think that has definitely played a big factor in it. Because as you say, whenever it gets wide, there is carnage, basically. You know, if you notice that they quite often will pull the ball back a long way to a receiver in the midfield who then throws a missed pass. And that's because there's a lot more space out wide. I was just watching some of the Saracens highlights, and the try that Daly made was just bad defending, like two missed tackles. But the first try they scored, Watson was in the line, but that was because Burns was back with Stewart covering at the back. So that's where the overlap comes from. So that rule has had its desired effect. But, you know, it just means that it makes making that much ground a lot easier, which has the detrimental effect for the viewer, I think, of making it less, because it's more unusual, more usual, it's less exciting.
Well, let's be honest, none of us particularly enjoy watching basketball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a good example would be 2 weeks ago when Nadolo was getting the ball with so much space, and it was like a cheat code, because even if a defender could get across, once he got ahead of steam, you know, he was going to run over them. Whereas back sort of 5 years ago, perhaps, his opposite winger even if he was half his size, would have been stood in his pocket by the time he got the ball. And, you know, and I think the Saracen style of defence that was so successful, I think the way round that was always to get the ball wide. So probably a lot of teams are playing some version of that, but it makes blitzing in the centre channels so dangerous now, because if you don't pick someone and hit them, you've left so much space outside you. And I think, you know, the rucks are being really heavily refereed as well. You know, you see players now getting pinged straight away if they're not rolling away, so the ball's quicker as well. And with more penalties, that gives more opportunities to kick the ball into corner. And as Russ, or was it Russ, or you just said, the rolling maul then comes into place, or the maul. There's not a lot of rolling anymore, but, you know.
Is there also a point then, talking about the blitz? There's been a number of
tries.
That's
not 1942.
No, true. There's been a number of tries. I'm thinking Harvey Skinner scored one. There was last week, there's one at the weekend as well, that have come from that blitz. And there's been nobody from the attack covering back in defence. So if there's an intercept or somebody drops the ball and there's a quick pickup, there's literally nobody home. Are the attacks committing that fully to getting the ball wide that there's almost no sweeper there to cover? It's an all or nothing play from both sides.
Well, I suppose that it's almost a risk worth taking, because if you get your interception wrong, you're going to get a yellow card.
Yeah. So, but, or not, I mean, it's, yeah, there's been a couple of pressure on the pass, or, and Wanyu's try, where he got a hand onto Freeman I don't know what it was, 15 metres from the try line. Freeman's got two men outside him and only one defender, and he gets a hand on Freeman's arm as he's trying to pass it. The ball drops to ground. Yeah. One of the Quinns players picks it up, quick pop, try scored. Done.
Yeah, that was really impressive, and I thought he was excellent.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, like, that's an opportunity for the defences.
Well, I'm saying that the attack are pushing, are committing so hard to getting in those wide channels with two or three players to make a 3-on-2 or a 3-on-1, that actually, if the defence can get that right, there's an opportunity for a breakaway try there.
I think when the attack is organised, they're going a long way back to do it. Whereas in that situation, Saints had got a little bit carried away, because they'd conceded an early try and they were trying everything, weren't they? And Quinns took advantage. But yeah, you're right. You know, you've got to just, I suppose the defensive team has just got to cause as much confusion as possible.
Can we just talk quickly about Alex Mitchell butchering the try? Because this haunts me.
The triple dummy.
Broke the line. I can't even remember how it happened, but somebody, either he broke the line or somebody else broke the line and passed to him. He's running straight at the 15 with two players to his left. So on the good side to pass to, one player on his right, triple pump fake, none of which got bought by the fullback and then got creamed in the tackle and then turned over.
It was said on commentary, but that was very good play by
Green.
Tyrone Green. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was.
One for Eddie there.
One for Eddie indeed.
It was very good play by Tyrone Green, but there's no way in the world he should be given an opportunity to do that.
And I think that non-try illustrates something else as well, in that came from a break by Hutchinson, I think it was, who then fed Mitchell on the inside. And they're getting the ball out wide and they're making a break, and then because they've missed a couple of players, you've then got players running that inside support line as well. So when the winger does make 40 metres, he's got players on their feet that can, you know, run that sort of scrum half line almost that New Zealand used to be so good at, which allows the offload.
Oh, so from a defensive perspective, what's the solution then? Is it that you go back to, instead of having two in the backfield, you almost go back to one and two halfway back, but then you're leaving yourself exposed to the 50-22. But your wingers have got a chance to get up into the line and be that extra player. Like,
first of all, we've got to decide whether this is a good thing. Is this a good thing for rugby? Because there's more. Everybody wanted more exciting rugby, more tries, which personally I don't see as a good, as a positive.
But it's not like they're all selling out, is it, in the grounds? No.
And what I love about rugby, and what we all love about rugby, and people will argue this, but is there's so many different ways to achieve a result, right? And defensively, like, celebrating, you mentioned something about the Hornets very early on there, Phil. And something which I've always been proud of in most of the teams that I've played in is that defensively, you sort of start like champion, you start with a solid defense. Yeah. You make yourself really hard to beat, and then everything comes from there, like your platform. And, you know, the old adage of championships are won by defense, games are won by attack.
Yeah. And yeah, think, and you know, credit to the players at Newquay. I haven't done any work on defence because I look at it and I go, I don't need to. You guys know what you're doing.
But the praise that, like last weekend, the BT Sport commentary were busy praising this new defence coach that Exeter have got. And they were praising him early in the second half where Exeter were getting torn to shreds and not laying a glove on Harlequins. And
four games, 111 points against.
So someone said it early on. You still do get big chunks of games with good defence, but it's a lot easier to pull it apart, you know, with smaller opportunities. I mean,
I don't want to belittle either of the teams in the Leicester Saracens game, because the Saracens' job was not easy. They were just very good at it.
Can I ask a question about Leicester? You've taken us very nicely back to Leicester Saracens, which is great, considering we're bouncing around all over the place. But I just wanted to ask, Andre Pollard for Leicester, have they panicked? Is that a panic signing from Leicester? From where George Ford has left. Now, I know he's an international 10 with amazing credentials, right? But having watched him a little bit or seen him a little bit for Montpellier, not brilliant. Always very good for South Africa, not great for Montpellier. And in the panic of losing George Ford, they've gone and got Pollard, and I feel like it could be very much a bit of a square peg in a round hole, considering the way they want to try and play.
I think you're probably right. I think they lost Ford, and they went, we need an international class fly half who's available.
They do kick a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, they do kick a lot, and his kicking is very good.
They kick a lot from deep, though, don't they?
Yes. I don't know. I think there is a point there that they jumped relatively early, and it's a big name signing. Does he suit the way that they play?
He's not played many minutes yet. He came off the bench on Saturday.
No,
it's very early, and then got
subbed off again. But yeah. Actually, if you look at it, he only played 29 games for Montpellier in three seasons. So he's only playing 10 games a season.
And that's the thing, right? So you're bringing in a marquee player who's played 10 games a season plus internationals for the last three or four years.
The Bulls, when he was at the Bulls, he was doing about 10 games a season in his six seasons there. He's not a regular. Like, they're relying on Freddie Burns to do.
Well, and Gopeth.
11 or 12 games a season. And Gopeth is their absolute last resort at 10, really, I think.
Well, he is, but he's been playing there because
Burns has been out and Pollard wasn't just arrived. Wasn't there yet. Yeah.
I mean, on that Tigers game, why they didn't try and kick a goal? Just
not the done thing.
You know, 10, 15 minutes after half time, they were really on top, and yeah, they scored a try. Stewart scored, and then they just were really on top and went for the corner twice. Didn't score either time. One was stolen and one was a mess. You know, they just made a mess of it. And then Saracens just went down the other end and scored. And, you know, like you say, Phil, it's not the dumb thing anymore. But, you know, it would have been the right thing to do. Just keep the momentum going. They would have only been 6 points behind because they had to score twice anyway. So, you know, why not go for the, I was going to say field goal then, but go for the penalty. And, you know, and it just showed that Saracens scored a try and then they got a penalty and they kicked it. They kicked the goal and it put them out of sight. And then, you know, they really went out of sight. You know, I was quite impressed with Tizard in that game. I thought he had a good game. And did you see that take in the line out that McFarland did?
Oh, yeah. That's cheat code play.
Yeah.
Single arm, well above his hand. Like, I mean, the guy must have hands like sheets of A4 paper.
Yeah, it was all done with his fingertips, wasn't it? It was just,
yeah,
it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's absolutely, yeah, just bonkers. But then catches it with one hand and pin perfect pass off the top as well with it.
Yeah.
The guy is just, I think he has a significant chance to get player of the season this year. But equally, like, you could go through that Saracen side and say most of them had a good game. Billy did what Billy does as well as Billy can do. Ben Earl is a machine.
Ominously good from signs from Saracens.
Yeah. Yeah. Early signs say they are looking far too good for the rest of the teams. But
yeah, three games, three wins, three bonus points, 122-4, 184 against. Sorry, yeah. 122-4, 84 against. But then I look at Bath, bottom of the league, and I feel a bit for Bath. 118-4, 154 against, played for, lost four.
Yeah. They don't know how to win games, do they? The best thing for Bath would have been to have got relegated last season, to have a season in the Championship, get used to winning some games of rugby, get used to knowing what that feeling's like and come back a year later much stronger.
But I mean, that is also very close to 40 points a game. It's more than 38 points a game that they're conceding. You aren't going to win many games. No,
absolutely, no. When you concede that many points a game. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, at the moment, they're below Worcester, who don't exist anymore. So,
you know. Yeah, I mean, that in itself is quite a damning indictment, isn't it? They've got less points than a team that technically doesn't exist. And unfortunately for Worcester, they find themselves, I think they're in court tomorrow, facing the liquidation paperwork and the actual winding up order. So it could well be that it's actually all over for Worcester tomorrow. Right, any other, have you got any other rugby news, any other rugby related business to chat through? I would go on to Quins versus Northampton, but I didn't watch it, so I can't really discuss it.
I know what Doug said about it.
Yeah,
and,
well,
and I watched a little bit whilst doing some work.
Unfortunately, Ben, our resident Sunday afternoon rugby fan, sat down to watch it and decided to enjoy a little stuff. News. So
yeah,
not
showing
not,
your age, Ben.
I know, absolutely. For sure. Yeah, I think, to be honest, with that game, you know, we've already probably said the main talking points from that, which was that abomination by Mitchell and how well the lad at 12 played for Quins.
Was it a Wanyu again? Was it?
And
Wanyu.
You know, we've said before, Northmore's a good player, and Murley is just quietly, I say quietly, he's scoring a lot of tries, but you know, he doesn't get a lot of fanfare, but he's a great winger.
Is Is Caden Murley the 2020-2021 Louis Leiner, Lewis Leiner?
Or Adam Radwan.
Or Adam Radwan.
Yeah, I mean, he could easily be. I think, you know, England probably have advertised what they're going to do with their winger positions, which is have a basically three fullbacks.
Yeah.
You know, Freeman, who, you know, impresses every time you see him. You got Stewart, who's sort of, I mean, he did play him on the wing, but he should be at fullback every week. And then, you know, you've got, you know, Arundel or Watson, you know, probably are your next two cabs off the rank with Noel, an option as well.
It'd probably be Noel. Judging by this, obviously, Noel played all the summer tests, didn't he?
Yeah, but you know, those
Watson wasn't playing in
those five could all,
yeah,
to a degree play fullback at international level. So, you've also got Malins.
Yeah.
So I think your actual out and out wingers are going to be struggling unless they're built like a second row.
Yeah, and I think that's why Radwan doesn't get the time, and equally why Murley won't get the time, and then. The other big winger who people shout for, Ollie Hassel-Collins, has shown that his defence needs a lot of work before he gets anywhere near it. But I think you're right. He wants three fullbacks in there. I mean, personally, I'd give up on Watson because the chances of
lasting
anywhere near long enough are just.
I think we've got so many people there now, Phil. We've got so many excellent players.
Yeah,
Anthony Watson was a superb rugby player. He might well still be, right? But over the last 2 years, we haven't seen it because he's always been injured.
Whereas, you can say the same about Tua Lange. The difference with Tua Lange is there's nobody else.
We haven't got an embarrassment riches at 13 or 12. Yeah.
No. I mean, I personally, with Watson, I think he's got so much talent that, you know, he's worth persevering with. I mean, if you were to pick an England team tomorrow, then no. But if he's still playing well in February, then I wouldn't.
He needs to have consistent games for Leicester. He needs to play for Leicester regularly between now and Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
Fit and excel. And I think he actually needs to show what he has got left, because the likes of Arundel. Now, I see, you know, we talked about Max Malins for ages almost being the ultimate 23 who could play on the wing, play at fullback, put on the 10 shirt if absolutely desperate. I see, you know, depending on who you pick at 10 and 12, Arundel could be an absolute game changer at 23, just because every time he comes off the bench, he does something absolutely magical. He terrifies defenders with his pace. He's got amazing footwork. I'm not saying he shouldn't start, but you know, if you've got a sort of weapon like that in your arsenal to bring off the bench, it's always going to be lurking there in the background of the defense's mind. So all of the work they're putting in, they're going, oh shit, you know, we've got to face Arundel in a minute.
I think with him, it's. And I'm not saying he's the same kind. He's the same player at all, and he's not. It's almost a bit of a debate, like with when Jason Robinson first arrived, and we didn't quite know what we had on our hands.
Yeah.
And I think originally with Jason Robinson, it was like, oh yeah, bring him on for 20 minutes at the end, and he could make a difference. But actually, when he started coming on for 20 minutes, it was like, well, actually, we'd be better off having this guy in the side from the start. And you know, I think Arundel is obviously all potential at the moment, and I'm not saying he's in the same class as Jason Robinson, but it's going to be the same question at the end of the day, isn't it? It's going to be like, well, what's the point of not having him in the team if he's going to do this every time he comes on for 20 minutes?
Yeah.
I think it's just easing him in, isn't it?
And I'm going to say something slightly controversial now. I don't think Marcus Smith should be playing 10 for England with the way that Eddie Jones wants to play.
Who should be?
Owen Farrell. If we're going to play the way that Eddie Jones wants us to play, if we were going to play a Harlequin style, with Dom Brandt, hard runner inside, hard runner outside, Smith pulling the strings. And I know we've probably been down this rabbit hole once or twice before. But if they're going to play that style, then fine, Marcus Smith, because you give him options. If you play with Smith, and Owen Farrell's going to play, right? He has to play. He's going to play. He's the captain. So that says to me that we need to play him at 10 and then find a 12 and find a 13. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Northmore. You know, we could, if Tuilagi was fit.
I think he wants to play them both.
Smith only works if Tuilagi's fit.
Yeah, agree. And we've said this a number of times. But if Farrell's nailed on to play, then he should be nailed on to play at 10. Judge, here's some of his performances from Saracens this season have been exemplary. His ability as a 10 is, and it's not in question. What actually is in question is probably his ability to play 12 and have a meaningful impact on the game. Because what it tends to do is it tends to slow up our attack. Whereas if he's being that pivot man at 10, actually we can have the creativity outside or the blunt force instrument.
You're right. I'm not going to disagree with you.
I think he wants to play both.
He doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like it in the way he sets up, in the way he sets the team up.
Really depend, because he definitely wants to play Tuilagi if Tuilagi can even stand up. So then it would be a matter of almost finding a brand new 12, unless you go back to Slade Tuilagi. Because if he's playing that back three we've just talked about, they're going to need more than one kicker, because they're going to kick a lot.
Yeah, but if those back three, they're all going to kick, aren't they?
You don't
need the 12 or the 13 to kick. So then is it...
You do if you're 10th at the bottom of a ruck.
Well, is it then Slade? Until,
yeah.
Or you give it to Tuilagi and you go through another ruck until your 10 gets out.
Yeah. Moral of the story is it's still a mess.
Like all of us with only one person on the team, we can kick have to do.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Cool. Any other rugby related stuff from you guys?
Nope.
Right. Nope. Let's get into some any other business then. I've no idea how long we've been going, so let's get into any other business. Phil, you've not been here for ages. Thrill me.
You know what? I'm going to really struggle because you guys have discussed all of my any other business and all the other things that have been going on in my life.
Any other business?
Yeah. It is basically rugby and injuries. That's my life at the moment. But I've run dry.
Well, you might be able to help me. Well, in fact, you probably won't be with my any other business before I come to Ben. Right? I at some point on Sunday morning, I coached rugby from 10 to 11. Then I went to the golf club and took Samuel to a golf lesson. Then I had to drive to Birmingham, and halfway through my drive to Birmingham, my left leg started to feel really, really sore. And by the time I got to Birmingham, my knee had swollen up like an absolute balloon. It was red hot, and my calf, my knee, and the bottom of my quad was just completely swollen, like solid. And look, I've been bitten by, long story short, I've been bitten by a horsefly, right?
I get it a lot.
And where I walk back during the Gospel Trail. And if I wear shorts or short sleeve tops in the summer, the horsefly, I've obviously got really rich blood or whatever that they like to feast on. But I didn't even feel it. But I'm still, my leg is still swollen now with this fucking bite. And it's an absolute joke. I'm struggling to bend my leg. And so my little bit of any other business is horseflies can eat a dick, because that hopefully that so might swell up.
You better
up.
Hope they don't.
Well, it might swell up.
Yeah, and they are bastards, and they will try to eat your dick.
motherfuckers. Honestly, it was so, felt like my leg was on fire. And I know what that feels like. From the inside out rather than the outside in this time, though. Anyway, so there you go. Horse flies. Bunch of twats. Ben.
The Rings of Power. Is it good or not? I don't know. I look forward to it, and I'm quite enjoying it while I watch it.
Is this some kind of Freemasons thing?
No, it's the new Lord of the Rings on Amazon.
Is the answer.
Every now and again, I'm watching it, and I just think,
what the fuck, why are they watching this?
Literally. You're like, that bit wasn't very good. Real people don't speak like that. But I am quite enjoying it, even though I think it might be rubbish. I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet.
Ask Eddie and Matt.
I'll give you a two-part informed opinion. People who talk about it on the radio say it's a pile of crap, and Russ and I are never going to know because it's popular.
Correct.
Well, is it popular if everyone's saying it's a load of crap?
Well, no, because they still watch it. Like it's almost like it's like the new Game of Thrones dragon thing. Like I'm never going to watch it. Never ever. No.
Never these screws. Never going to use them.
It can go in the same box as Grease and Dirty Dancing. Never going to watch them.
Mate, now you just... I don't know what you're saying now, but that's just bad. Right. Let's get out of here. Phil, I was just reading the WhatsApp you just sent, and it was taking ages to download. I was trying to find out what it was. Let's get out of here. We will be back next week. The Lensman's not here, obviously, but he's at the dart, so hopefully he might be back next week. And then we'll go from there. We'll have a little bit more information about a potential event for the after party for the Mall Over Invitational as well. So if you come in, keep your ears peeled. Speak to you later. Go well.
Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.